This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
The best player at the time, and we're always going to say that. I mean, it's something that we've said every single year, starting back to 1996 with Ozzie as the GM. We're going to draft best available player. So I think if we're picking at 27 and there's an edge rusher and he's the best guy, we're probably going to pick him, and it's going to hold through with every round. I think it's an important position. I think we were maybe second in the league in sacks last year, but having a continuous influx of young pass rush talent, guys that can set the edge and play the run, guys that play like Ravens, physical players who can get to the quarterback, I think that's a priority for us for sure.
That's Ravens GM Eric DaCosta talking about edge rusher possibly at pick number 27. We're right now, the Ravens sit in the first round, 27 overall. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, news from the nest. And the Ravens have 11 picks in the first round. But he also stressed, too, the best player available. Mm-hmm. So if it's a cornerback, safety, edge rusher, I mean, they're not taking, say, a running back. Just throwing out a position is number one on their board at that time. They're not taking a running back. They're taking best player available in regards to position of need. Is that the best way to explain it?
Now, Bob, let me ask you this, because, when you really look at it, at 27, who could come in and start for you? What position? Because right now, they could line up and play a game right now and be damn good.
All right. Ardarius Washington. Has he signed his tender, by the way? Didn't they put, like, the they could lose him, perhaps,
somebody
tender?
I don't think anybody's going to go after
him. All right, so you got Wiggins, Humphrey, maybe cornerback could start. Then you go with a rookie and a second-year guy and a veteran dude, unless you're counting on, Armour Davis or somebody.
Well, if you had the lineup today, you put Humphrey on one side, Wiggins on the other, and Tampa would probably be in the slot type thing. But, I mean, really, when you really look at it, they need – Eric needs, a really good draft with guys that – provide depth, that are going to be good players, but can give depth. And whether it be O-line, D-line, inside linebacker, corner, provide depth. All right, at 27, whoever they take at 27, if you take a safety, a pass rusher, safety, pass rusher, or guard, they're playing. They're going to play, and they'll probably play a lot. But then after that, you know, I think, hey, be in the rotation somewhere. Help us out. And the only other place, Bob, that would be a possibility that would be a starter, kicker. Kicker could be.
Right, but you're not taking one at 27.
Yeah,
you have 11 picks. You've got what?
Right.
Yeah, four in the sixth and one in the seventh.
Right. So, you know, those five picks, let me get lucky and get two, you know, because I have six picks there. Let two of them make the team. Let two of them make the team. But I need a lot of depth stuff, you know, and then, like, if my second rounder is better than we thought and he can provide more and play more reps, great. Third rounder, same thing. But I think there's going to be a couple O linemen in there. There's going to be a couple defensive linemen in there. There's going to be an inside backer in there. There's going to be a corner in there. There's going to be a safety in there. It's going to go quickly, you know. And could they use all 11? They probably could because, all right, let's say that 7 of the 11 make the team and provide depth and stuff. That's what they need. They need, you know, like, because, I mean, who do you trust in the O-line? The only guy you got is Cleveland, you know, as a backup right now. D-line, you got no depth in the D-line, so you need those kind of guys. That's what you need. You know, a guy, hopefully, you know, a guy that can be like a Travis Jones, rotational guy in his first year, second, third year. Yeah, you know, hopefully a guy that we want to pay in 3 years or 4 years, whatever it may be. So that's what Eric needs to hit on is guys that can come in and provide depth that we see a future for. And not like this year, all the draft picks, Bob. I mean, they can't afford to have all these guys come in and be hurt. You know, like Isaac and Tampa.
Or running back, Ali.
They're all hurt. You know, so they need healthy bodies that can come in and provide some depth for them this year.
But 11 picks, getting back to that, the realistic chances of them using all 11 for Ravens purposes, other than trading for more, higher draft capital, or what? I mean, will that board stay the way that it is? 27, 59 overall, 91. You know what I mean? Then you get two fourth-round picks. We talk fifth rounder, both comp picks there. Then the four sixth rounders, both two of those are comp picks. And then you have pick number 243 in the seventh round.
Yeah. They could maybe trade some of the sixes or sevens, Bob, for next year's picks, possibly, you know, if their board is kind of run down a little bit. But I could see them, Bob, trading back more so than going forward in 20. Just because because a lot of these mock drafts now, there's no safeties in them, is there? You know, the safeties seem to be dropping. Even Emin Wari.
Yeah, Mel still has Starks in Baltimore at 27, but that was his latest mock draft was a week ago.
So, I mean, if you're sitting there at 27 and you're at 23 or 24 and both safeties are still there and there's still pass rushers you like, there's an old lineman you like, I can see them trading back and getting another, you know, another two or, you know, another quality pick, you know, and then will they still have 11? I don't think they would end up because, like you said, Bob, the sixes and sevens, I mean, that's flip of a coin. You're hoping that you get something out of that.
Mike Tannenbaum, by the way, it's News from the Nest. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Olin McGraw is on the other side of the glass. ESPN, former GM at 27, has the Ravens taking Mike Green, the edge rusher out of Marshall, who's got some off-the-field issues that he has to deal with. Starks goes 28, by the way, safety out of Georgia to Detroit. And Emin Wari goes to Kansas City at 31.
Yeah,
when he was talking about as a
13,
top 15
14,
pick.
Yeah. I like Emin Wari. I like Starks. And, you know, Mike Green, I think Mike Green's a hell of a player. And Bob, I don't know, you know, on tape, would I take him at 27? Yes, on tape. But I don't know the character You know, he's got some off-the-field issues. And is he still on people's boards? I don't know that. But talent-wise, he would be a worthy pick at 27 and probably be a pretty damn good pick at 27 because he is a productive sack guy.
What do you think, Nolan? 11 picks, Ravens use all of them?
I mean, about a month or so ago, I would have said no way. I mean, there's just no chance he can do it. But, I mean, the more you think about it, and I know I've talked to Vinny a few times off air about it, I mean, of their late round picks, there's nothing really there that they could bundle to move up significantly. So it's not like they're going to hop back into the second round or anything like that. DaCosta keeps saying it, seeming more and more to me that they're just going to stand pat with what they have.
And the other reason, Bob, is here's the other reason is Lindenbaum, Kyle Hamilton, Travis Jones, your tight ends. You got to pay all those guys next year, you know, and you're going to pay Kyle Hamilton top of the market. You're going to pay Lindenbaum top of the market. So you got some guys that are going to get top of the market. So I need cheap labor. So I need a bunch. So having 11 of these guys, whether they make the roster or on the practice squad, that can they can develop and eventually help me. Because I'm going to need, when I got a lot, you know, look at Philly. They got all those high-priced guys. You better have some cheap dudes in there, too.
And real quick, Jeff Zrebeck wrote about this today, The Athletic, about Mike Green. Green, the thumbnail edge rusher, the guys that could be around at 27. Mike Green, probably a non-starter for the Ravens after he acknowledged that he faced two allegations of sexual assault earlier in his career. And the kid, Pierce Jr. at Tennessee, I guess there's been some character concerns with him. Yeah. As his draft stock seems to be
Bob, how do you take Green? How do you take Green, who's got sexual assault things, when you're dealing with Justin Tucker and you've been through the Ray Rice thing, and your owner come out and said, you know, we don't do that?
It's 58-80, 105.7 The Fan. All of this we'll be following. The first round's less than a month, so we'll know who the Ravens take at 27 this time a month from now. When we come back, let's count some dough, turn it up Tuesday style. Fire cell, talk about sports subjects of this day. Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, Ravens Wire. Preview the draft a little bit with Kevin. And could there be another round of free agency post June 1 that the Ravens could dip their toes in? And back to the Orioles predictions for the pitching. We've done a couple topics for the starting rotation, finish that off, and we'll talk about the bullpen. Will the Mountain lead the Orioles in saves in 2025?
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not gonna buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
1057. The Fan.
Time for buy or sell. It's 5880-105.7 The Fan. Tons going on in the world of sports. Sweet 16, both Maryland men and women, part of that fun. Baseball season begins in earnest Thursday. Orioles taking on the Blue Jays. Got the NFL draft in less than a month and everything else going on in between. But right now, let's count some dough. Buy or sell.
Market's pretty flat today. The Dow is down 48. The S&P's up 0.22. NASDAQ is up 41. DraftKings down $1.77, 38.75. And Under Armour's down a nickel to 6.16.
We'll get started here with our sports topics in college basketball. A lot of coaching changes going on across the college basketball landscape, including Ryan Odom, former UMBC coach. Well, in an ironic turn of events, he is now coaching Virginia, the team that he led the upset over just a few years ago when he was with the Retrievers there at UMBC. Odom's track record, though, certainly speaks for itself. Since leaving UMBC for Utah State, was able to get them to the tournament in his second year, then off to VCU, where he had them back in the tournament also in year two. Three different teams to the postseason in the span of 8 years. Certainly impressive. But buy or sell, Bob, Odom will be able to work even faster at Virginia, have them back in the tournament next year.
Ooh, next year. I'll go ahead and buy that. And look, he was on the show last week when Jimmy Patos was here. And we've had Ryan Odom on a couple of times, as a matter of fact. His dad was a longtime assistant, Dave Odom, to Terry Holland at the University of Virginia before Dave got the Wake Forest job way back when. So he's got ties to that program going back to when he was a child. But yeah, he works his magic, needs a little talent infusion in Virginia, but they're just a couple years removed from winning the national championship, and I think he's the guy to get it done. I think the connections are there, the roots run deep in Charlottesville, so I'm buying that, Nolan McGrell.
Well, it still remains to be seen if the Falcons will want to trade Kirk Cousins before the season starts, but whatever they decide to do, or if they decide to trade him, it's going to require his input as well, because he holds a no-trade clause. According to Albert Breer, Cousins doesn't want to go through what he did last offseason, which would be landing somewhere new as a presumptive starter, only for the team to draft a quarterback as well. He's not taking any team at their word and would rather wait until after the draft to waive his clause if necessary. Vinny, are you buying or selling that there will be a real opportunity for Cousins to jump on after the draft?
I'll buy it, because I think Cleveland would be the one. With Stefanski, he's got a relationship with him. And then Cleveland at two, they take Abdul Carter or, you know, Hunter or something like that. Yeah, I can see that happening.
Over to baseball, Juan Soto earning that massive contract extension this offseason. A lot of different areas of his game led him to the massive payday, but maybe one that's unsung in today's game, his ability to work a count and take walks. Between 2021 and 23, led the league in walks every single season. And, you know, until last year when he paired him, when he was batting either ahead of Aaron Judge or right behind him, that's the only year that he hasn't led the league, but it was very close. Judge led the way with 133 last summer. Soto finished just a few shy at 129. His career high in walks, 145 back in his final year with the Nats. So I'll ask you, Bob, buy or sell, Soto will join elite company with a 150 walk season before his career is done.
Before his career is done, I'll sell it. Because the Mets have some firepower in their lineup. So that's kind of a pick your poison thing. But Nolan, correct me if I'm wrong. Weren't the Dodgers walking Soto to get the Judge in the World Series, or at least in the ALCS? Cleveland was doing it. Mm-hmm. So he's a formidable guy with World Series experience when he was young with the Nats, but a $150 in walks, I'm selling that.
By the way, the only players in league history to accomplish that, Barry Bonds, Babe Ruth, Mark McGwire, Ted Williams. So that's the elite company being referred to there. We'll go back to college athletics here. Everyone's talking college hoops, but what about an early look at the college football season? Tom Fornelli has identified all of the college football playoff contenders in the Big Ten. Pretty easy to point to the usual suspects, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, but he also lists Illinois here. And to be fair, they did go 10-3 last year. Nice placement in the Citrus Bowl, but that was just their seventh bowl appearance in the last 20 years. Football, not always their calling card. So, Vinny, are you buying or selling that Illinois could be the surprise CFP participant like Indiana was this past season?
I'm going to sell that. I think Penn State, because they got the quarterback and everybody, I think Penn State's going to be good. Michigan will be better, especially if that freshman quarterback plays well. Ohio State may take a little step back with two new coordinators. Illinois, I don't see them doing like Indiana did.
What about old Nebraska with Minnie Mahomes there? Third year with Matt Rhule.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm not buying it. Yeah. I'm not buying it.
And our last topic of the day, the White Sox. Historically bad last season, a record of 41-121. And the expectation is they'll be basement dwellers again in 2025. However, even the worst teams of all time have not turned in back-to-back campaigns that abysmal. I mean, the 1962 Mets, who had the 120-loss season that the White Sox just surpassed, well, they improved to only 111 losses in 1963. Even the 18 Orioles improved by 7 games. The 03 Tigers went from 119 losses to 90. So buy or sell, Bob, the White Sox, they will be that bad again, losing at least 115 this summer.
What's over-under? It's like 48?
It can't be good.
Yeah, it's... Oh, man. And that would still be an improvement over last year. I'll buy it. I mean, if Luis Robert is healthy, he'll help that offense for sure, but maybe he becomes a trade chip for them. Yeah, things are dire on the South side with the old Chicago White Sox. We'll have Mike Harmon on Thursday, by the way, who's from Chicago. Grew up in that side of the Windy City, so he's a White Sox fan, Fox Sports Radio, but I wouldn't want to be a White Sox fan right now. But Nolan, correct me if I'm wrong again, because I don't have it in front of me. 21 Orioles sucked, right?
Right, but they weren't in that. This was like the top five worst of all time.
I got you, but weren't they in the 110 loss area, something like that, and then in 22 had a winning record?
It's quite. You're right, because that was the talking point at the time, one of the biggest turnarounds year to year.
But to answer your question, I'm selling it. The White Sox will not sniff 500. The only time they're going to see a 500 record is when a team with a 500 record plays them, and you're looking at the standings in the newspaper. We'll come back. Well, the Ravens better be above 500, or we're going to be a lot of running hotters coming up here September through December for sure. But barring catastrophic injuries, we don't see that being a reality. We'll talk to Kevin Allstriker about that, and we'll get back to said Orioles, do our predictions for the pitching staff, starting pitchers into the bullpen. Felix Bautista, even if he was 100% healthy, I wouldn't predict what he did 2023, but then again, that's why they throw the baseball. Free agency, still work to be done for Eric DaCosta to build this 2025 roster to its completion. And here to talk about that from USA Today, Ravens Wire's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show, as we do every Tuesday, Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, what is happening?
What's up, guys? A little lull period in NFL free agency, as to be expected after those first, you know, couple of days, first week. But Ravens still making some salary cap moves and trying to figure out how to build their roster.
Speaking of which, DeAndre Hopkins, Cooper Rush, re-signed Stanley, re-signed Wallace, Ricard, brought back Ben Cleveland to the surprise of a lot of people. But they've lost some pieces as well. What do you think? Roster better today than it was when they lost in Buffalo, or is that still a to-be-determined scenario here?
I think it's, I guess if you're talking about losing Ricard, or not Ricard, losing McCary and Stevens and all that, I guess it's kind of a push for me right now. I mean, you kind of have to weigh losing McCary, Stevens, and then, you know, guys like Josh Jones, Malik Harrison up against them, bringing in DeAndre Hopkins, Jake Kummel, and Cooper Rush, which, I mean, I guess if you want to call it a little worse right now, that's okay, but I don't think it's to the point where it's like, oh, they're going to not make the playoffs because of that. I think that DeAndre Hopkins is an underrated signing to a lot of people, and to me, it's like their biggest loss is the guy who retired, in my opinion, and Michael Pierce, and I think that they will have ample opportunity to replace him with guys like Calais Campbell in a very deep draft class. So I guess with all that in mind, if you wanted to call it a little worse, I wouldn't disagree. But I think that by the time we're sitting here talking about week one, they will have made the proper moves. And obviously the draft class will help with that too, to where I'm not losing sleep over any of the guys they lost outside of Michael Pierce.
Kevin, do you think they stay at 27? I think they stay at 27 or trade back, one of the two.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking. And I know a lot of people, and I've talked about it too, about they should get aggressive, they should trade up. Which, I mean, I could see happening, but we know that the fact that Baltimore has 11 draft picks, I don't know if they use all 11, although we know the philosophy of Baltimore, which is they want as many swings as they can get. You know, they had 6 fourth-round draft picks a couple of years ago, and people were saying, oh, they're going to trade 2 of them, you know, they're going to consolidate, move up, and they used all 6 of those fourth-round draft picks. So I think for Baltimore, there will be somebody at 27 that they like. Obviously, you know, draft boards work that way where you have a handful of guys and they'll come off the board to you. I think that, though, there is a trade back possibility because, especially, I mentioned that defensive line class earlier, if you trade back into the early second round and you pick up, you know, another day two pick in that trade, there are going to be defensive linemen, for example, that you could get in another draft class, maybe the top 20 talent, top 18 talent, in the early second round because of how deep the class is. I think if there's a guy that falls to you, I think that you might think about trading up a couple of spots. You know, for example, a Tyler Booker is someone who's not athletic, but I think has the tools to be a really good player in the league. The Ravens have a bunch of needs they can address. It's not like they have to focus on one particular one, which obviously they like going best player available. I think that they could definitely trade up, but I agree. I think realistically, they probably stay or trade back.
Now, Kevin, when you really look at it, and we were talking about it earlier, at 27, they are not in an absolute must. We got to have this position because we need him to start. They don't need that at any position.
Nope, and that's how the Ravens operate, and that's how they like to operate. And I think with the Ronnie Stanley re-signing, if Ronnie was not back, I think a lot of people would be kind of pounding the table, depending on how free agency went, for a first-round offensive lineman, no matter what. But now that Ronnie Stanley is back, you can still take an offensive lineman in the first round. It's not out of the question, but you might want to kick that guy into guard or, you know, kind of figure out where that role is. Because, yes, Ronnie's not a long-term solution on the roster, but now you have the ability to, okay, Ronnie's here, you can – either push that first-round tackle down a little bit to next season, or you can go and take a safety or an edge guy, and then maybe it's a second-round guard that you take and you can plug and play him, or he'll be in the competition for the left or right guard spot. So I think that the Ravens, like I said, like the best player available strategy, they do so well at that because they don't pigeonhole themselves into, okay, we need to take an offensive lineman no matter what, and then everybody is off their board who they have a first-round grade on. They don't force taking a second-round talent in their mind in the first round. You know, it's what they kind of did last year with Nate Wiggins, where I know he was the top-rated corner on their board, but a lot of people were thinking about, okay, they need an offensive lineman. They got Roger Rosengarten in the second round, and it worked out beautifully for both those guys. So that's been Baltimore's MO, and I expect the same thing this year too.
Kevin, the way I really look at it is because, you know, they've got so many high-priced guys, and you've got Hamilton and Linderbaum that are going to be high-priced guys, that you need all these draft picks because you need depth. You need the cheap labor. And that's why I think that, you know, you don't want to get rid of a lot of these picks because you're going to need them on the practice squad or on the regular squad because you're going to need some cheap guys to fill spots.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I could maybe see them consolidating one or at the max two picks, but I wouldn't be shocked if they do end up taking all 11. And that is exactly because of what you said, where it's not just Lamar Jackson's contract here. And again, this is just kind of how you have to build a roster with a quarterback on the deal Lamar is. But with guys eligible for extensions, like you mentioned, Linderbaum and Hamilton being the big two, it's, for example, having Nate Wiggins on that contract for the next 3-4 years, if you include the fifth-year option, Rosengarten for the next 3 years. You have solid contributors, guys that can be Pro Bowl, All-Pro talents if they continue to ascend on rookie contracts. And so while their expensive contracts will, you know, it ebbs and flows where, you know, Mark Andrews, that contract will be up if he stays on the roster after this upcoming year. You have to make decisions on guys like Marlon Humphrey, et cetera. You know, more expensive guys are coming in. So it's not just about hitting on your first round pick, not just about hitting on your day two picks. Obviously, we've seen Baltimore have a ton of success with mid round, late round guys, and that's part of the reason why they've been such a consistent franchise over the course of their franchise history. So I think that for the Ravens and what their plan is, it's not just to trade five picks to move up, you know, a bunch of spots. Obviously, if there's an opportunity to trade up, Eric DaCosta is always working the phones on draft weekend, but we know he loves his swings, and I expect him to take as many as he can get.
Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. We're less than a month away, Kevin, from the first round of the NFL draft. What's happening on the website right now?
Yeah, we're continuing to plug away at trying to figure out how the Ravens will continue navigating the pre-draft free agency period, if they'll make any moves before that. And then obviously guys that they can add, positions of need, and that obviously is ever-changing with the landscape of the NFL, and kind of also doing a little bit of a around the AFC North, looking at what moves the other teams have made, and, you know, whether Aaron Rodgers could maybe be on his way to Pittsburgh, that could have a big impact on Baltimore too.
He's Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday. We'll talk to you next week.
You know, guys, always appreciate you. Thanks so much. Talk next week.
All right, Kevin Allstriker. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Come back. Get back to the Orioles rotation and the bullpen. Our predictions, we already did. Innings pitched, lowest starter, earned run average. We'll talk about wins, appearances, who's going to lead the team in saves, and who's going to be the breakout candidate for the 2025 Orioles pitching staff. And then we're going to have some NFL lunch for you coming up at 1 o'clock. And a draft profile, number two of the day, takes us to Ann Arbor. Stick around for that. Memorial Park Cannon Yards at Pickles Pub, where we get reacquainted with everyone, Tom and the Crush Bus and everybody down there. But earlier in the program, we started with innings pitched. I said Charlie Morton. Nolan, you went with Eplin. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yep, you're right.
And you went Eplin?
No, I went Kramer.
Kramer. Oh, right. All right. ERA, I want Povich. We're talking about starting pitchers here.
Mm-hmm. Sagano, a wild card pick for me.
And you want G-Rod, assuming he makes 15 appearances. Now, wins. Last year, Corbin Burnes led the Orioles in wins with 15. Wins are no longer the end-all, be-all. Before, when you talk about starting pitcher getting in a Hall of Fame, how many wins do they have? Now it's like, well, what's this whip? And what's whatever. And it is kind of a strong indicator of how effective you really are. But Grayson Rodriguez was second with 13. Burnes is in Arizona. Rodriguez is on the IL. So Nolan McGraw, I ask you, who will lead the Orioles starters in wins in 2025?
This is a tough one. I mean, you could really go any direction just because you laid it out there. I mean, there sometimes there's no rhyme or reason behind individual performance being linked to wins. I mean, there always seems to be one pitcher every year who gets off to a hot start or is riding a really hot month and just never gets run support. But they're still going out there and dealing on a every five-day basis. So if I got to pick one, I'm probably going with a guy who I think is going to be there from game one to game 162, and that would lead me to Charlie Morton. You know, didn't think that he would throw the most innings pitched, but I think that longevity will lead him, plus with a little bit of help with some run support, he'll be the guy that ends up with the most wins.
Well, I'm going to, since I took Kramer as my most innings pitched, I'm going to take Kramer to have the most wins. Might only be like 13.
I had eight a year ago, 8 and 10 last year.
And he spent time on the IL. But, you know, can you win your division or get to the playoffs with four guys around 10 to 12 wins? Or do you need kind of that studly guy? I'm with you. I'm going Charlie Morton. We'll lead the Orioles in wins with Cade Povich being my wild card, no pun intended, to finish second, if not lead in that category. Right. I'm really liking his upside. I'm drinking the Povich Kool-Aid today.
Well, it was just nice to see after the great spring he had that that got rewarded. And, mm-hmm. I mean, there was some hesitation. It seemed like some doubt out there the past couple weeks that they could pull the rug out from underneath him and he might start the year in AAA and have to work his way up. But I don't know. It just never seemed likely to me. So good to see that they just went with the obvious choice.
And he added a new pitch to the arsenal, one of these new fancy terms for a breaking ball. So hopefully that parlays into regular season success. Last year, as we get to the bullpen, Craig Kimbrel led the Orioles in saves with 23. We all know how that ended. 2 years ago, Felix Bautista had 33 before he went on the IL. Nolan McGraw, first of all, well, the leader in saves exceed 23 saves, and who will that save guy be?
Yeah, I'm not going to overthink this one. Right. It will be more than 23, and it will be Bautista. Even with a cautious start or an entire season approach of trying to limit him as much as possible, not use him when it's absolutely necessary, just your other options just aren't great at all. I mean, we've seen spots here and there of Cano being thrown in that role doesn't stick. Dominguez, you know what he did down the stretch last year. It's not great. His spring was awful. So I just don't think there's anyone there that's a clear cut, oh, he's going to actually challenge Bautista in that department.
Yeah, I say the same thing. I say Bautista. And I would say that if it isn't Bautista, they're in trouble.
Yeah. And this is kind of a duh.
Yeah.
Unless he gets hurt, Felix Bautista. And real quick, last year, Yennier Cano led the Orioles pitchers and appearances with 70, who will lead the Orioles in appearances this year. He's rubber-armed. We know that about Yennier Cano. But O'Keegan Aiken was pushing 70 himself, too.
Yeah, this one's tough. And I don't know if you really want to put either one of those guys in that spot again. I mean, I look at a Jacob Webb. He had 60 appearances last year and almost seemed like they were ready to throw him just in the trash can. And as soon as the season was done, saying, all right, we got every last bit of juice out of this orange, time to throw the rind in the trash. So can you afford to have Cano use that much in back-to-back years? It's a dangerous game, but without any other clear-cut options, I'm going to stick with Cano here.
How about you talk about rubber arm? How about Suarez if he's going to be in the bullpen all the time? I'll go Suarez, Bob.
Yeah, I was thinking about him too, Vinny, but with the inevitable injury.
And he's going to get a start.
Then he'll get to the rotation. Then we see him every fifth day. But if everyone stays healthy, because like Aiken, he can give you multiple innings. Batista, Dominguez, they're one-inning guys. We're not getting five-out saves from Felix Batista, we don't think, at least early in the season. But I'll stick with, I'll go Cano, because something tells me Suarez is going to be making at least 8 to 10, maybe more starts this year.
And don't sleep on, I guess, C&L Perez. He had 62 appearances last year. Maybe he's in the combo.
Yeah, I'm just, he didn't give up any home runs, which is good. And he caught a lot of home runs with his hat, which put him on the put him on SportsCenter all the time. Tomorrow, we'll start getting to position players. Orioles' best player is going to start on IL, but he wasn't going to be my pick for most valuable Oriole anyway. And we'll get into that when we return tomorrow morning for Woman Crush Wednesday. But we still have another hour to go. NFL lunch coming up next. Another draft profile staying on the D-line, this time going to Ann Arbor. A guy that in all likelihood will be long gone by the time the Ravens select at 27. And we'll talk about the start of the baseball season, division predictions, and all that fun stuff with Gabe Lax at the bottom of the hour.